Just as I said in the beginning, this is the first time I'm here, so don't have any kind of super big expectations, but I'll try my very best, trying to explaining something which can be helpful. So somebody's going out and somebody's coming in. What I want to try to do is to talk a little bit about contemplation, to develop wisdom, to help live a nice life. And what I'm going to say is based on some ancient teachings we can find in old books. It's nothing I made up. And part of what I'm going to say is also trying to answer the question why. And why in a broad sense. It can be why you come here tonight. It can be why I'm sitting here with a brown robe, being living a monastic life. Why? Why are we doing this? And what I will do, I will start up with reciting four short paragraphs, which will set the direction to help getting you into understanding a way of contemplation, which can help you to let go of what you find problematic in life. Whatever it is, really. It's in an ancient language. Most of you, some of you, or maybe many of you, know something called Pali. So I'm going to chant four paragraphs in Pali, and I will explain what it is afterwards. And we'll have some examples. So I'll see whether I'm able to do it in a nice way. Evam me sutam mekam samayam bhagava savatiyam viharati jetavane anatta pindikasarame Tena ko pana samayena yasma girimanando abadiko hoti dukkito balgilano atako ayasma anando yena bhagava tenupasam kami upasam kamitva Bhagavantam abhivadetva ekamantam nisidi ekamantam nisinnoko ayasma anando bhagavantam etadavocha ayasma anando Ayasma bante girimanando abadiko hoti dukkito balgalano sadu bante bhagava yena ayasma girimanando Tenupasam kamatu anukampam upadayati. Sacheko tvamananda girimananda sabikuno dasasanya baseyasi tanam kopanitam vichati yam girimananda sabikuno dasasanya sutavaso abado tanaso patipasambeya katamadasa anicca sanya anatta sanya asubha sanya adinava sanya pahana sanya viraga sanya niroda sanya sabaloke anabirata sanya sabha sankaresu anicca sanya anapana sati. But before I continue, I'm under order here of the spiritual director of BSWA, Kolajan Brahm, and he has said that everybody who comes here and give the first talk, and since everything which is given here, the talks, they're recorded and they even streamed live, so there are lots of people all around the planet sitting watching this, and that includes a little village on the west coast of Norway where I'm from. There's a village with a few thousand people living there, and in one of those houses right now there's a lady sitting in a chair, a comfortable chair in her living room, with a huge iPad in her lap, and she sees exactly what you see now, and that's my mother. And she's probably streaming this on a big screen in her living room, maybe has some relatives there, and she says, "Ah, my son." So since this is an order from Ajahn Brahm, I have to say a couple of sentences in Norwegian, so you can see and listen how it sounds when somebody speaks in Norwegian. It's very, very quick. And I guess the camera is there, so I have to talk to the camera. Is it there? Which camera is it? Is that one? Okay, cool. Hi, Mor. Og brødre, venner og familie. Her mitt første tale på bysenteret her I Australia. Dessverre kunne jeg ikke komme hjem igjen til jul I år. Det må vi prøve neste år. Så det eneste jeg kan gjøre å ønske god jul og godt nyttår. Så tales vi på telefon. Did anybody understand that? I told my mother that I'm giving my first talk at Dhammaloka, and this is like a city center here. And I told her that I'm sorry I couldn't come back to Norway for Christmas, but I'll try that next year. And I sent her a greetings, Christmas greeting, and a Happy New Year. So now I've done my duty according to the spiritual director at BSWA. Okay, so now I'm going to try to say something wise. And I will start with telling a short introduction story. This will be based on a lot of examples and I will lead you step by step by step until something which you probably won't understand, but based on a method, you can contemplate it. Let's say that you decide to go visit a friend. So you put on a jacket, you jump into the car, and you drive somewhere to your friend or your relative or your parents. You park the car, ring the doorbell, and your friend greets you saying hello, and you go in. You pass through the kitchen into the living room, and there you do something together for a while. Maybe you eat dinner, lunch, maybe you just sit and eat tea and coffee, drink tea and coffee, and just talking and discussing. And then after a while, when you're done, you rise up to leave. So you walk over the floor and you pass through the kitchen again on the way out, and that's where you see your wallet. So you pick up your wallet, but then as soon as you picked it up, you realize that, oh, it's not your wallet after all. It looks like your wallet, same color, same brand, maybe, but it belongs to your friend. So then as soon as you realize that, you put it down. You let it go. Right away. No need for thinking. It's not yours. And then you continue out, put on your jacket, go into your car, and then you realize, ah, your wallet, it's in your jacket. The point is that when you walked out of the house of your friend, you thought you saw your wallet. And you picked it up because it was, you took it to be yours. This is my wallet. But as soon as you realized that, ah, it's not mine, then you let it go. So this idea of owning, if you own something, then it's difficult to let it go. But if you can realize in a moment that, ah, it's not my wallet, you let it go right away. And this is a story I will come back to now when I go through some examples. Because what I want to talk about is change in kind of modern translations. We call it impermanence, but I like to use the word change. Something changes in your life. And when something changes, then something new happens. And suddenly you can compare. There's something in the past, and there's something different now because of change. And as soon as you can compare, then you can say that this is better or this is worse. And if you think this change leads to something better, then you will naturally start to develop helpful, skillful actions to repeat that. But if this change leads to something which is worse, even dangerous, then you will naturally avoid developing actions which take you that direction. and it will help you to let go. So if there is change, and this change is for the worse, then you can let it go. If the change is for the better, you will stick to it and you will develop it. And I will go through now 5, 6 examples. And I will apply this through these 6, 7 examples. This chant I did in this ancient language, Pali, was about a sick monk at the time of the Buddha. And the attendant of the Buddha, he approached the Buddha and said, can you please go and talk to this monk called and say something to him so he can become well. But the Buddha said, no, you can go, Ananda. Ananda was the attendant. And go there and talk to him about 10 perceptions. And if this sick monk could hear about these 10 perceptions, and he can contemplate them, then he might get well. And some of those perceptions I'm going to talk about now. Not all of them, because this is a Friday evening. This is not an advanced course on a meditation center, so I have to do just some of them, which is easy to understand. But let's say, first, a very simple example. Let's say you are sick. Let's say you had influenza. And when you're influenza, and you have influenza, and you're sick, you lie in bed, you have headache, maybe you're throwing up, you can't sleep, it feels awful, and the only thing you want is to get well. But as soon as you have this influenza, this virus in you, it's not fun. But it does change. So after 2 or 3 days, you feel better. And maybe after 4 days, you're 95%. And if you are wise enough to contemplate this, then you can say, okay, I had this virus in my body. So that's one state of my body. And then afterwards, I got healthy. Which is better? And everybody, this is logical. I know this is a very basic example, but that's the point. Everybody will say that being healthy is better, and being sick is worse. So if you contemplate being sick, you might probably start to develop some skillful actions to avoid being sick in the future. So maybe you start washing your hands more often. Maybe you leave the room if there's lots of people coughing. You don't want to get a virus into your body. So you start to develop skillful means to avoid something you find even like dangerous or something you don't want. And this is logical. Everybody understands this, and that's why I'm saying it. And you can also say that we're talking about mine. If you have an influenza, if you have this virus in your body, can you say that this influenza is mine? Is it my influenza? Is it my virus which is inside my body? And most people say no. It's just something which came into this body and you just want to get rid of it as quick as possible. And because you don't take it to be yours, it's not your virus, it's easy to let it go. You don't want to continue to be sick. You want to heal. This is a very basic example, but just to get your mind rolling in the right direction. Next is being tired. In most Western countries, and that includes myself before I become a monk, we work a lot. We really do. And many of us are tired because we work too much. It's almost like a lifestyle problem of a society. So if you've been working a lot, even just like myself last week, it's not only like monastics also have to work. Last week I had to work 13 hours continuously to write a document to the government. And the day after I was really, really, really tired. And I remember how it was to work as a financial manager before I became a monk. I actually worked between 60 and 70 hours every week, continuously. And I was continuously tired. But one day you decide to rest. And you're not tired anymore. And there is change again. And you have two different things to compare. To be really tired and to be rested. And if you contemplate that, what's better? Is it better to be tired? Or is it better to not be tired? And this again, most people know this, but still we work too much. But if you contemplate this, and we realize inside that it is actually better, it's a better life if we are rested more or less all the time. Our perception of life, quality of life, is higher up. It's nicer to live, basically. And if you can contemplate that, really do that, that it is actually better to be rested, then you will start to develop means and tools, helpful techniques to keep yourself rested so you don't work too much. Because you see the danger in working too much. It's not fun. The day after I worked 13 hours writing a document for the government, I was just sleeping all day. I was supposed to do meditation in my little hut in the forest. I was just sleeping. But I knew that I just had to sleep and catch up. And then I could come back to a state of mind which is rested, which feels much better. And you can also ask the question, is being tired, is that yours? When I was really tired after working hard, was that my tiredness? And after some contemplation, you will think, well, no, this is cause and effect. What happened for me was that, again, the spiritual director asked me to help, and they didn't have much time, so we did it. We worked hard. And for you, it might be that your family is asking for something, so you work more. So it's caused. It's not that it's your tiredness, but it is that you are motivated. There's causes and conditions here which are at play. And if you can be aware of them, then you maybe can let them go. And you can do some changes in your life so you are not that tired as you walk through life. This example is also quite easy to understand. Next example is moral conduct. For example, stealing, or lying or killing. Let's say that if you are living in a relationship, like a stable relationship, and you end up having an affair with somebody else in secrecy. You are then creating a lot of problems for yourself, because you will walk around always being tense inside. You want to hide that you have cheated your partner, and you don't want to be found out, and all of that creates a lot of suffering for you. One day that change might come, because you are found out. And you have to face up with your partner that you have had an affair outside of your normal relationship. And you might get forgiveness, if you're lucky. And then you can come back to a good relationship again. So it has changed. And if you compare again how it is to live in a relationship where you're cheating on your partner, and all your effort to kind of cover up your lies and all the remorse you have inside, if you compare that state to living with a partner without having a remorse, feeling good inside, knowing that you're doing the right thing, that's two different states of mind. And then the question is again, if you compare, which is better? Is it better to live in a relationship where you have nothing to hide? Where you can trust your partner? Or is it better to live in a life where you always have remorse and you feel bad and you're panically trying to cover up everything? And I think most know this inside. Yeah, if you have an affair outside, maybe there are some sensory kind of satisfaction. But there is a mental side to this, which can be really heavy. And if you compare, if you honestly look at those two states of mind, living in a good relationship with somebody or cheating on somebody, I think most people will say it's better to live in a good relationship with one person and stay that way. We also have hate in our mind. Something can happen to you. Maybe somebody upsets you. Somebody calls you a name. And you start to generate anger and hate towards somebody. It doesn't feel good inside. It's very tiring to be angry. It's very tiring to have hate inside. But then you go to bed and you have a nice long sleep and you wake up in the morning again and the hate is gone. The anger is gone. And again, you can contemplate. What's best? What's better? What's better, having anger inside or not having anger inside? And most people, I think, will find that not having anger inside is preferable it's nothing you wish to be there. And you also can think, well, this hate, is that mine? Or is it caused? You had an episode of a lot of anger, but you can say that is because you met this person and he said something or did something. In reality, it's that you don't have the wisdom, but most people, they will get angry now and then. And as long as you have that anger, you will probably conclude that freedom from anger is better. And again, you can start to look at skillful means. What can you do to avoid anger? What can you do to avoid hate? Maybe you can stop, you can avoid some situations. So far, these are situations and emotions which most of us understand. And I'm going to go two more steps. The next is thinking. Just normal thinking. Some kind of volitional activity in your mind. The problem now is that we are living our lives continuously with a thinking mind. There's always this thinking and this activity and this volition, all these emotions inside. And that's all we know. And it's only if you somehow start to practice some kind of meditation that you can find a state of mind without thinking. And this is where a lot of people don't have experience. It's only those who do some spiritual development to kind of purify their minds. They know how it is to have a mind which is thinking actively and can compare it with a mind which is peaceful, where there are almost no thoughts, there's no emotions, there is only peace. And for those who know this, for those who have experienced how it is to have a peaceful mind, they can compare. They can say, what's better? To have a mind which is thinking, or is it better to have a mind which is peaceful? And everybody I have taught to, I've been talking to, is trying to learn meditation to find this peace everybody's talking about in various kind of spiritual traditions. They say that a peaceful mind is better than a thinking mind. Thinking is something which is tiring, but you can only kind of experience that by seeing an alternative. And I just want to read out something here, some research about thinking. Because there are a lot of people who do a lot of thinking and too much thinking. And I just want to read out something about thinking too much. If you think too much, it will increase the chance of a mental illness. A 2013 study published in a kind of psychological report reports dwelling on your shortcomings, mistakes, and problems increase your risk of mental problems. And ruminating can set you up for vicious circles that is hard to break. Ruminating wreak havoc on your mental health. As your mental health declines, and then your tendency to ruminate increases even more. And all this thinking, it also interferes with your problem-solving skills. Research shows overthinkers believe they're helping themselves by rehashing their problems in their heads. But it shows, instead of that, it shows analysis paralysis is reality. And this over-analyzing, over-thinking, over-worrying interferes with the problem-solving itself. All the thinking also disturbs your sleep. You try to go to bed, but your mind is just churning and thinking in circles. So it's difficult to go to sleep. And they all, some people even say that in the very end, if you're ending just increasing thinking, you end up starting using some kind of drugs to calm yourself down. And then you end up destroying your brain. The last part is sensory impressions. Most people who live a normal life live like in a city like Perth with a family, and they have the job and their friends. They go shopping, go working, visiting their friends. And you're living a life where your senses are continuously bombarded by impressions. There is an alternative to that, and that is what you do on a retreat. And that is also what monastics do. As maybe the opposite of most people, like we two here, we live in a hut. 6 square meters in a forest without power or electricity or water, without entertainment, no TV, no PlayStation, no internet. We don't own a house or a car. We don't have any debt. And by living the lifestyle we do, we avoid a lot of sensory impressions. So if you go, for example, sailing, if you go on vacation and you go on board a sailing boat, and you go sailing for a couple of weeks, then you can try the same. Or you can go to the mountains. That's what I like to do in the past. To go walking in the mountains a week or two. If you do that, or you go on a retreat, like we BSWA has Janagro Retreat Center, where we can have seclusion from sensory impressions a week or 9 days, that is when there's change. You know how it is to live a normal life with your family and your friends and work, and you can put yourself in another situation, either walking in the mountains sailing or going on a retreat. And that is when you can experience yourself how it is to have less sensory impressions. And only then are you able to judge and compare and say, what's better? Really, what's better? Living like a monk out in the forest, alone, in a little hut? Or living in a nice house, apartment in Perth, job, family? And when you know both those two states of living and you compare them, then you can ask, what's better? And that is why many of us are actually living the lives we do. We find this better. Living very simple, out in the forest, gives us a peaceful mind. It gives us less sensory impressions. And what we find is that inside our mind really gets a boost. What we perceive is basically happiness. What we perceive is freedom from afflictions. We perceive freedom from being sick, freedom from hate, freedom from tiredness, freedom from thinking, freedom from a shopping center, freedom from work, freedom from a house, freedom from a wife, if you're a man. And it's delicious. It's fantastic. But you don't believe me, do you? This is why we're living the way we do. Why we live so simple. Because it's better. If you live a monastic life in a good way and really try to do it, it's amazing what can happen to yourself inside. So I just want to finish off by saying that I really do recommend you to take and try out some really freedoms. Going on a retreat, go a long trip into the mountains, go sailing, play around and see what's better. And if you yourself can come to a retreat and find that, whoa, this is actually really, really, really nice, then you will start to apply skillful means to improve your life. But if you don't know, if you never try a retreat, if you never go walking in the mountains for days, you don't know, and you won't change. It's just words from a monk saying some weird words. So that's my wish to you. See how free you can be. Okay? Oops, questions. Okay. There's two questions, and I'm going to only answer one of them quickly. There's a good question from, I think, is a person called Laura, and she asks, isn't thinking necessary for all discoveries that improve life, like medical research and improvements? And the thing is, even though if you learn to let go of thinking, to find rest and to increase your energy and find more peace and a happier life, you're not going to stop thinking. If you see somebody who is very developed on a spiritual path, they haven't stopped thinking. They actually are working really hard and they're thinking. But they're able to let go of the thinking and rest. So we are going to think and we will think, but we can also have a rest and we can have freedom from thinking from time to time. Is there a question in the back?
Yeah, I was just wondering, when you talk about what you were saying reminds me of letting go. Do you have any tips for people to let go of things or going on in their lives?
Let go of what?
Like let go of stress or busyness or stuff like that.
If you're sleepy, sleep more. It's very simple. general advice about letting go.
Ajahn, someone's left their house keys on the floor. Their house keys.
Well, he says that there's some house keys lying on the floor. Yeah. I think if you want an answer, please come up to me afterwards. I think it's time to kind of round off tonight. Can we do that? So I will just finish off with our paying respect to Bodhidharma Sangha.
No.